Welcome to the Legacy Series of Growing Empires, a curated collection of standout episodes that have shaped the foundation of what we're building next. We're evolving. A new show is on the horizon, and it's designed for the sophisticated investors, capital allocators, and those looking to go deeper into strategies, structures, and market shifts behind today's most successful real estate syndications. While we prepare for a launch, we've handpicked some of our most powerful conversations to revisit. Whether you're discovering them for the first time or listening again with a fresh perspective, these episodes lay the groundwork for the future. And if you haven't already, join the Empire Investment Club at jenniferdejesus.com to get early access to future offerings, investor briefings, and behind-the-scenes insights from the new show. Let's dive in.
Welcome to episode 3 of season 8 of the Growing Empire Show. Today, I'm back with my special guest, Joshua Kim. And this is part 2 of our episode regarding how to fuel your investment portfolio purchases using SBA loans. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
So where does the SBA line up in comparison to other financing options that are out there for businesses?
Yeah, glad you asked. So the main reason that banks do SBA loans is because there's a government guarantee associated with it. So, you know, so in the banking world, they call it a credit enhancer, right? If you own real estate, you know, or have a ton of liquid cash and, you know, the deal you want isn't that great, they call that credit enhancements because it's mitigating the bank's downside risk. Right now, and this is one of the other benefits I forgot to mention, the 7A loan, which is the more common loan product, because you can use it for anything, you know, whereas 504 is real estate only. The guarantee percentage is traditionally 75%. And so what that means is that the bank gives Jen a loan for $1 million to go buy a building or a business or whatever. And let's say, you know, something really bad happens, COVID 2.0 happens, the business goes under. The bank will actually get 75% of that back from the SBA. The SBA, once they go through the process and they file for it, the SBA will cut them a check for $750,000. So their downside risk is only really $250,000. Right now, it's actually 90%, so which means they give you a loan for $1 million. Their downside risk is actually only $100,000.
Wow.
And it's a very powerful thing. I have a couple of deals that I'm working on right now for people. And, you know, we've brought it to the table and they're like, you know, if this was a regular, you know, if we didn't have the 75% guarantee, we probably wouldn't do it. But, you know, in the spirit of the SBA program, and the reason the government does that, obviously, it's to encourage lending to small businesses, right? And, you know, small businesses often, they don't have the collateral to back something. It might be more projections based. So this is the government's way of basically incentivizing banks to still do loans to provide capital to small business owners. Because, you know, again, at the end of the day, small business owners are the backbone of the economy. That's where most of the jobs are created, not at the Fortune 500 level. And so that's the main benefit, is that you're going to be able to get deals done with an SBA loan that you would not be able to get done with a traditional loan. In that same vein, the down payment requirements specifically for the audience here on real estate are a lot lower. You know, most of the time it's only 10%.
So
like the surgeon I have, he's buying, you know, $7.5 million worth of real estate. Well, buying plus getting capital for, you know, for the growth side of renter, it's like $7.5 million. He's only going to have to put down 10% for everything. I mean, you go to a conventional lender, they're going to want minimum what? Even if it's owner occupied, 20-25%.
25-30 nowadays.
Yeah,
there's still some lenders out there doing 20%, but you've got to have a very long-standing relationship to come close to that. And, you know, with other commercial products, the terms are not favorable. I mean, they're usually 5-year fixed and then they float and prepayment penalties and all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff. But if that's what you need, that's, you know, other than an SBA loan,
you got other options. You got to pay the price to get it done, right? And often for most business owners, it's a negligible difference, because the benefit they get from getting the deal done is, you know, far exceeds that. But yeah, I mean, and then the other thing too, and I'll mention because you touched on it. So for real estate, you can go up to 25 years with SBA. And, you know, depending on the lender, you can, you know, obviously as we help a client shop a loan, that's one of the things we do, is we're negotiating for them, like, hey, how long are you willing to fix the interest rate? And so it always kind of depends on the bank and what rate you want to lock it in at. I mean, you know, some banks are willing to lock it in for 5 to 10 years. You know, if they want to lock it in at 10 years, they might be pricing it a little bit above where it is today and what you could get it at, you know, if you lock it in on 5 years. But the point is that it's possible. I mean, they're willing to do that. And the term is fixed. I mean, you can't change how long the term is. That's dictated by the SBA policies for these loan products. Real estate, it's 25 years. You can ask for shorter if you want, but they can't force you to take a shorter loan term, right? So, but yeah, that's, yeah.
Awesome. So does it make sense to work with a consultant when you're getting an SBA loan if you don't really know where to start?
Well, yeah. And so, I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, if I was in the market right now to just go buy an apartment building at, you know, something you can't use an SBA loan for because there's no business to tie to it, I would probably just ask you. I'm like, hey, Jen, like, I'm trying to do this deal. I know I have the equity capital to get it done. The deal looks good. I need help finding a lender. Why? Because, I mean, that's not my expertise. I don't have the context. I don't really understand what different products are out there. You've got a world of experience working with, you know, with lenders like that for the deals that you work on a daily basis. So in much the same capacity, I say it's kind of self-servingly because one of my business does is that, but we're able to really shortcut the process. I mean, the business that I have is called 7A Accelerator, and we call it an accelerator for a reason. I mean, we're able to really cut back on the time it takes someone to get the financing they need by making sure they get set up with the right lender to start. Because I've seen dentists with 5 locations who want to go buy a building get declined by Bank of America and Chase because they, you know, they like, oh, we want you to put down 25%. He's like, I don't have to. It's an SBA loan. I still need to put down 10%. And so, you know, just think about that. If the dentist who's making $2.5 million a year, you know, with an 800 FICO and plenty of assets, is having friction with certain lenders on an SBA loan, like most other guys, that, I mean, that's pretty high up there, you know? So that's really where us in a consulting capacity can help, is we just make sure that a borrower is going to be paired up with the right lender for their project to start. Because, you know, Jen, you could refer someone to me and say, hey, I got a guy, he wants to go buy a business, he needs $2 million. I'm going to send him to a different lender than I sent David to. I sent David to a lender that specializes in, you know, smaller, quick turnaround working capital loans, like under, you know, under $500,000, right? And that's all I needed. So it's a different credit box for every lender, which I'm sure you understand being in real estate. There's different lenders that do different types of programs. And that's really where the value is. You know, we're able to shortcut the time, but also, you know, when you have that knowledge, you can rate shop and get better pricing from lenders.
Okay. Are you able to use the SBA loans if you are also entitled to grant money or opportunity zone money and different things that really have to do with the location of the property that you're buying? Can you use SBA loans in conjunction with that?
Yeah, there's no clauses in SBA loans that would preclude you from that. I mean, I know people that have used it for, you know, the caveat that I'll say is obviously, like with opportunity zone products, usually people are just doing it as like a 1031 cap gains deferral. Right. I mean, that's the whole point of it. And they're not looking at it like, hey, I'm going to go buy this building because I want to go put my business in it. So I don't see a ton of overlap between those a lot of times, but that's not to say you can't. I mean, if you are looking, like, let's say you got a manufacturing business and you want to go buy a piece of real estate and there's one, you know, in your vicinity, it's in a good area and it's in an opportunity zone, you can get an SBA loan to buy that building, you know, 1031, selling your old one or whatever, and take advantage of both benefits. And I think, you know, if you're able to do that, you definitely should, because a lot of those programs out there, I think, are great. You know, grant money, there's nothing there that'll preclude you either. If anything, it'll strengthen your deal because you can go to the bank and say, hey, we're eligible for all these grants. I'm working with a company right now, more on the tax credit side, but they've got some really cool technology. They've got, how to describe it? They have a UV light scanner that can basically scan. They initially built it for food, but it turns out it works perfectly for COVID. But it can test for bacteria particles and virus particles on food just with a special black light scanner. And so for them, they have the majority of their revenue has actually been coming from state, federal, and local grants and stuff like that. And so we're able to show the bank like, hey, these guys have a $1 million a year contract with, you know, the state of North Dakota. These guys have a whatever grant from the federal government of whatever, right? So grant money is often something that'll actually strengthen the deal because they'll say, okay, well, you've got a good business because otherwise the government would not have given you all this money.
Understood. So, and did I catch this correctly that you can use an SBA loan for not only the acquisition of the real estate, but you can also use it for construction costs?
Yeah, you could use it for DI expenses or just straight up ground up construction as well. A ground up construction is obviously, it's trickier. The bank will require more than 10%, probably closer to like 15 to 20, depending on if they consider the property, but it's going to be like a general use versus a special use. You know, general use is just office condos. Special use would be like an assisted living facility, right? I mean, you can't lease that out to anyone. But yeah, you can do that. And then tenant improvements is something that's big. I'm working with a lot of dentists right now. They're like, hey, you know, ever since COVID has kind of started going away, everyone's coming out of the woodwork. They need to go back to their dentist. And I don't have enough chairs. I need to go knock down 3 walls, put more chairs in, hire more people. And, you know, they're coming to meet it, help them find a landlord who's going to be able to do that. So yeah, TI, you know, any sort of construction costs, it's a very common use, especially right now. I mean, there's so much going on.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
If you're like me, you know the importance of diversifying your investment portfolio. Real estate investments, whether you're an active or passive investor, are a great way to add variety and reduce risk to your overall portfolio. But what about stabilizing that portfolio? If your portfolio is diversified through real estate, you still have to stabilize your properties with the right tenancy, know when and exactly what capital improvements to do, and assess your entire property's portfolio to maximize property values and their income potential year over year. Yes, it's a lot, and you'll need help to make sure you're looking at everything as objectively and strategically as possible. Get the guidance you need to assess and make the right decisions that will stabilize and optimize your property so their longevity is assured. Book a call with me, and I'll guide you through the process and answer your questions. Go to growingempires.com and click on Book a Consult, and you'll be on your way to a healthier, more stabilized, and diversified portfolio with real estate. So what situations would be better for conventional loans versus SBA loans and vice versa?
Yeah, so that's a great question. A lot of it, I think, depends on certain industries. So just, I'll use dentists as an example. So a lot of conventional lenders, and you know, rightly or wrongly, and it's actually kind of a touchy subject in the dental industry, They liken it to some of the what the banks do with young associate dentists. It's give them a bottle of whiskey and a loaded gun, right? As long as you have your dental degree, like a year of experience and a pulse, they'll pretty much just blindly give you up to like $750,000 to $1 million for your first practice, right? And I often tell dentists, I'm like, look, go take that money. They price it at absolute rock bottom. It's actually cheaper than SBA, which is crazy to me. But once you hit that cap of $750,000 or $1 million, whatever the number is, they really won't help you anymore above and beyond that. So SBA comes in great for the guy, like once he's actually started his practice, he's like, hey, maybe I want to start a second location, or I need more money to grow. I need more money to buy out my partner. Maybe they use that $1 million to build out the practice, scale it up, but they don't actually own the real estate. And now they want to own the real estate that they're in just because they know they'll be there for a while. So there's certain industry specific situations like that where going with a conventional loan product is going to be better. I mean, I tell them like, listen, if you just put the loan side to side, you're going to go with, you know, Chase's practice finance solutions every time, but they have its limitations, right? So that's what I would say. There are certain situations where conventional is better. And, you know, I don't compete with those guys. I said, listen, like, go take that money. And then when you need more, call me, because they're not going to help you above, you know, $750,000 to $1 million. There are obviously a lot of situations where SBA is far better, right? Like I told you about the other dentist who, you know, that was his problem. He had multiple locations already. He didn't have a lot of debt, you know, despite having 5 practices, he didn't have a lot of debt. It was running them very profitably. And, you know, the lenders just were like, hey, you know, we don't want to do this because we've kind of hit our dollar amount. So SBA is the perfect solution for him. He's actually looking at buying a pair of other practices in the same city that he's in with the real estate and just expanding it into his network of practices. SBA, as it relates to the audience, I'd say a lot of times, like if you have a business and you know you want to get some sort of real estate loan for it, SBA is 99% of the time going to be better than conventional because of the better rate, fixed, you know, and you've got a long, you know, got a much longer term, and the down payment requirements are going to be a lot less. So those are just generally speaking situations where SBA is going to be better. A lot of it's going to be on the real estate side. A lot of people go with SBA loans primarily because of the lower down payment requirements. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of situations where conventional does have its merits. I mean, for example, someone from the audience were to reach out and say, hey, I want to go buy an apartment building, I'm going to say, hey, I can't help. SBA doesn't do apartment buildings. You know, go talk to Jen. I'm sure she's got a loan broker that specializes in, you know, apartment buildings. So that's the other limitation of it, is it's kind of got a more narrow scope as far as what you can actually do with it. It's got to be tied to a business, and it's got to meet a couple, you know, very broad categories or guidelines. But, you know, if you can qualify for SBA for your transaction, a lot of times it's going to be better than what most conventional options are.
So what about a situation like a mixed-use building? So say, because we have a lot of those around here.
Yeah.
So somebody owns a mixed-use building that maybe has a laundromat that should be owner-operated, you know, on the first floor of the retail, and then like apartments above. If you're buying the business and the real estate, essentially, and you were going to do, you know, an owner-operator for the laundromat, could you use an SBA loan to acquire that building?
So what you're contemplating is not only buying the real estate on the ground floor, but you also own all the real estate above. So you just lease out all the apartments.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
It's possible. What I would say is mixed use is a possibility. Where it gets tricky is you kind of have this majority occupancy test. So they look at like, okay, what's the total square footage of the building and what percentage of that is, you know, basically sectioned off for business use. So in that case, let's say it's a 10-story building, the laundromat takes up the whole floor, less the reception to the apartment building or whatever, the mayor room, all that. I would imagine the laundromat's only going to be maybe about 5% of the total square footage of the building.
Mm-hmm.
They would come back and say, hey, you know, there's not enough owner-occupied space here for this to really qualify. Now, if they were coming in and saying, hey, we're not going to go buy the apartments above us, we're just here to buy the ground floor, and, you know, we lease out the other part of the ground floor to the apartment building for their administrative office, the mayor or whatever, that would work. But at that point, it's because it's closer to like a 50-50 split. And you can make the argument, hey, I've got an owner-operator business, you know, we're buying some other space with it and then we just sublease out. But it's got to be majority. So, you know, 50.1% of the space out there, you have to be able to argue is for the business. So that's really one of the only limitations with SBA.
Is there anything that prevents you from doing like a combination loan? Like what if I wanted to fit out for a business in a space like that laundromat? So let's say I wanted to fit out the whole laundromat, but I use a conventional loan or even a commercial loan to buy the actual real estate. Could you do that?
Yeah. So that's actually a great situation. I'm dealing with one exactly like that right now, not on a mixed use property, but for a dentist. So she used a conventional loan to buy the building. And then basically she's been having issues with the local lender about giving her more money to do improvements. She wants to expand because it's, you know, COVID and this and that. And they're just they're being very conservative right now. And so like, yeah, look, you own the building. We can get you an SBA loan to do all the, you know, the capital improvements, leasehold improvements, whatever. You own the building. And because she owns the building, we can actually amortize it out 25 years. We don't have to do it on a 10-year term. Because she owns the real estate, we can put it out 25 years. But yeah, that's definitely an option. You know, you go out there and say, hey, I use conventional to buy the real estate and I want some SBA capital now to either do improvements for a business or, you know, maybe borrow some money to put the, you know, put up the business there. Maybe so you want to put a restaurant, you know, you got to go buy the ovens, the equipment, all this and that. So yeah, that's definitely an option.
Okay. What's the typical time frame from the time of application to the time of funding for an SBA loan?
Yeah. So I love that question. And I usually ask people, you know, how long is a piece of string, right? It's going to depend on a lot of factors. So, you know, if you've got an established business and you're going into the bank and say, hey, I need, you know, $300,000 of expansion capital, the SBA has, you know, anything under 350, they actually have like an expedited underwriting and approval process for existing companies. And so, for example, like David's, it was like 30 days from application to being funded. It was 30 days quick. I've also got other deals where it takes 90 days because a lot of times, and this is a misconception to clarify for people, it's usually not, if you're working with a competent SBA lender, and again, what I said earlier about not all banks are created equal, you got to work with a competent lender. The holdup is rarely with the lender. If you're working with one that has experience with SBA loans, it's usually on the borrower side. Like in the case of real estate transactions, it's usually the buyer or the seller. So the bank will take the application package. They'll get back to you guys in 2 weeks and say, hey, here's your approval letter. Here's our legally binding commitment to lend. And then they give you a laundry list of stuff they need to close, right? You know, we need copies of this, insurance, you know, all the typical stuff that a lender is going to ask for lending on a piece of real estate, right? Tatters insurance, they got to be named as the lost payee, all that boring stuff. And usually what happens is, you know, the seller can't find something. Oh, shit, I don't know what that is. Let me go call my lawyer. hey, where's, oh, I don't know. What do you mean we don't have it? Okay. So then they have to like go draft, you know, they don't have an operating agreement for the LLC, or they don't have this and all that. So I tell people, if you have all of your stuff buttoned up, you have all your ducks in a row, when you go in for the application, you can go for the application of funding in 45 days, even on a real estate deal, right? But a lot of times there's documents missing, and yeah, it's somebody's fault. Just, you know, it's getting a multi-million dollar loan to go buy a building or buy a business. It's got moving parts, and you know, everyone wants to make sure it's all there. So that's what I would say is it's going to depend a lot on how complete that package is and how quickly the borrower can bring documents to the table for the closing checklist. But 45 to 60 days is a very typical timeline on like a real estate purchase. I'm working with some, you know, some other dentists right now. They're trying to buy a building with a 7A loan. And I'm like, hey, you know, you got your contract, you got your financials generally together. We get this done in 45 days. But a lot of it's going to depend on you getting stuff back to us quickly. Because look, once we get you the checklist, if you had all the items on the checklist next day, we could close. But, you know, it usually takes 2-3 weeks for them to pull the rest of that stuff together.
Okay. So how would my listeners get in touch with you if they would like to reach out to you for guidance?
Yeah. So I'm sure we can put a link to my site, my consulting site on the show below. It's but if you want to email me directly, it's josh@7accelerator.com. And you know, just reach out and just kind of give me a synopsis of your project. If it's something I think we can help with, I'll let you know. We can book a call. Yeah, you walk through it. And, you know, again, the process for getting an SBA loan is not as complicated as a lot of people think. It's just about working with the right banks. And, you know, that's really the value that we bring to people is, you know, I've got a young face, but my years of experience dealing with SBA loans, both on my own businesses that I had and helping other people with it, it's just the time savings, getting put with the right lender to start. And I'm sure you can attest to this in real estate. I mean, there's lenders out there, loan brokers, they bring a loan to the table who's like, yeah, you know, we can do it. And then last second, they falter, you know, one reason. And that nobody likes that in the real estate realm. Nobody likes that in the business realm either. I mean, if it's along brother's side. So we just make sure that we bring someone to the table that will be able to execute and get it done, but multiple, you know, for whatever reason, one can't get the deal done. They don't like it. You know, it's not too much of a time delay.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, we'll keep all of your information on our show notes page for reference, but Joshua, I appreciate your time today and all your expertise on this topic of SBA loans. I thought it was very beneficial, and I'm sure my listeners will absolutely enjoy the time that we took today to discuss. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and thanks. And, you know, again, to anyone in the audience, if you've just got questions about SBA or you want to know how you might be able to use it for, you know, your business or, you know, keep more money in your pocket at the end of the day, feel free to reach out. I did also mention it on there. I also have a business that specializes in tax credit consulting. So if you do anything with commercial real estate, you buy it. There's a lot of tax credits available on the state and federal level. We can help you identify. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about that, even though it's not the main topic of the podcast, feel free to reach out. I'm sure we can help you with that too.
Okay. Well, again, I appreciate all your time. Thank you for listening to the two-part segment with Joshua Kim on SBA loans. I hope you got a lot out of those episodes. And until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.